Close your eyes and picture yourself on a tropical beach. Far away, across the delicate sand dunes, you see a jet-black stallion galloping at full speed. On top of that stallion is me, Evan Damereau, along with my co-host Chris Manning. Don't we look amazing? After literally hours of waiting, watching us gallop across the beach, we arrive. Turns out we were further away than you initially thought. We look even better up close than we did far away, and I lean down to you and whisper the words you've yearned to hear for so long. Welcome to Thursday's episode of Locked On Cavs, the number one Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, brought to you by the Locked On Podcast Network. On today's episode, we discuss roster updates, answer your mailbag questions, and give a preview of Cavs Wizards. We also call out Justin Rowan for his cyberbullying. You're welcome.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hey guys, welcome back to Thursday's episode of Locked On Cavs. Joined today, mobily, is my snowbird co-host, Chris Manning. Chris, how's the flight, man? How are your arms feeling?
You know, I don't like flying. I also just want to say, Justin, you know what? We're out here earning our, I'm out here earning checks. We're fitting in our podcast recordings at times where we need to. We're just out here grinding. You do it. You once you record more than like two episodes a week, like you can talk crap to us. No, my take is that flying is bad. I don't like flying, and I just generally think it's a miserable experience, and people have to do it all the time. Kudos to you, especially if you don't have like the luxury of like flying in a private jet, which I'm sure is much nicer, and I certainly am not doing. But I think flying is garbage. But yeah, I feel like a boom, like really do feel like a boomer right now. I'm in Florida in January, and I was like mildly upset today when I was walking around Fort Lauderdale, and it was like 40 degrees, and I had to wear a jacket, and I was like, I didn't come here for this.
You know, you complaining about the, yeah, just you complaining about the weather comparatively to Cleveland, where there was a nice layer of ice on my car this morning. It's definitely like a first world problem, man, but I appreciate you taking shots at Mr. Rowan on the inferior podcast.
Yeah, you know what? Like, I was staying out of the fray, but and I love Carter to death. This is a pro Carter Rodriguez podcast. this is no longer a pro Justin Rowan podcast. It's a mine because Justin, you know, and I also want to say I have a really good job trolling Justin with his own bit on Twitter today. Good use of the Stephen. Oh. That was just excellent work.
Thank you. I mean, you know, I learned from watching him. It's like that really old marijuana PSA where the dad confronts his son. He's like, where did you learn to do this? He's like, I learned it from watching you. It's just kind of like that. Justin tells me all the time, he's like, listen, you poke the bear, and if you can't take the heat, get out of the kitchen kind of shit. But, like, I don't think he knows how far I'm willing to take this rivalry. And I know, like you said, they only record twice a week, and Carter just came back, and, like, he has a valid excuse, but Justin doesn't have a kid. He lives in a condo in Winnipeg, Canada, with his wife and dog, and that's it. What's his excuse? So, but enough shit talking about the inferior podcast today. Let's just touch base on some Cavs news, actually. So we have two status updates. We'll start with Ante Zizek, because it's a little bit of a bummer. But the Cavs sent out an update today saying that Ante Zizek missed the last five games with a vestibular condition, also known as vertigo. They announced today that he'll be out indefinitely. Just to quote the Cavs here, they said he is experiencing symptoms of nausea and dizziness, and it was determined by the Cavs medical team that he requires a period of vestibular rehabilitation to evaluate those symptoms further. His return to basketball activities will be updated as appropriate. Chris, I know we joke around that Ante more than likely won't be with Cleveland next year, more or less maybe not even in the NBA next year. But when I saw this news, I was just kind of bummed out because you read all these like feel-good stories about how he's going hiking in Utah to get into shape, and he's trying his best to make sure he can crack the rotation because Bayline was straight up with him saying that the odds are stacked against him right now, and it just feels like everything that could go wrong for Ante Zizek this year in Cleveland has gone wrong, and I just, maybe it's just pity at this point, but I just feel bad for him.
Yeah, I do too. I don't, like, want to, like, we don't have a ton of information about this exactly, like, you know, this full kind of origin story of this. At least it's in, I think it's medical, so I think, you know, it's obviously this is just privacy here, but it's the thing that matters for us is certainly that he's not playing, like, from our point of view, like, that's really what matters here. But I think it just seems like he's never really been able to catch a consistent break. Like, he kind of came into the Cavs at a weird time. Certainly was not, like, came in as kind of a throw-in piece and as a Kyrie trade or whatever, and then, like, has never really been able to establish himself. There's stuff he does that I quite like. There's stuff that he does that I think, okay, like, this stuff can work. And he's had 5-6 games worked for him. I like what I see, but then he also doesn't play. It doesn't seem like he's really a beeline big. It certainly doesn't feel like he's getting part of the reason he doesn't get the chances is maybe also because the Cavs have a lot of bigs ahead of him that are certainly better right now, and it'd be hard in any world, I think, to be like, hey, Tristan Thompson, we're not going to play you because we want to play Ante Zizic. It's just a tough look for him. I hope he succeeds. I hope he can find a level of success in some basketball capacity. It just feels like his whole time with the Cavs is just going to be a kind of an underwhelming experience for everyone involved.
No, I absolutely agree with you, and I'm pulling up his stats right now. Like, he has played 16 games this season and is averaging 4.3 points, 3.4 rebounds, 0.3 blocks, 0.4 steals, and 9.9 minutes per game. And like you said, yeah, no, Tristan Thompson is by and far, you could argue that he's Cleveland's best or second best player. Then after John Henson, even when John Henson is out, Zizek could barely crack the rotation. And I don't know, he just doesn't seem like he's a Bayline guy. And I think this season is just a nice continuous reminder of just how his time in Cleveland has been ever since he came here in the Kyrie trade a few years ago. And just kind of unremarkable and unnoteworthy across the board. And I think it's just going to quietly come to an end. Maybe he'll get a lot more burn post-trade deadline and everything. But we will see what happens going forward. I don't know. I mean, I feel for him because this is his livelihood, and it sucks that this opportunity keeps getting taken away from him. But at the same time, like, it's just another weird chapter in Ante Zizek's time in Cleveland. And you know what? Just shout out to Baby Shaq. Hope you feel better soon.
Yeah, and he's still really young, which, like, if you're looking at his, like, basketball future, like, he's only 23, just turned 23, like, 2 weeks ago. So, I guess we'll kind of see what happens with him there, but I do kind of just hope it doesn't come back. I think post-trade deadline, whatever happens with the front court, I do think, you know, things come out. Like, it'll be harder to say, like, you shouldn't just see what you got, even if, even if it's not 100% something that's going to make the Cavs, like, any better off with him. It's just you might as well if he's back around.
No, I absolutely agree. But in other injury-related news, the Cavs also updated us on Dylan Windler, who today underwent successful surgery. Today as in Wednesday for Thursday's episode, just to keep it one scundo with everyone. He actually went under surgery yesterday as I continue to read this. God, no wonder Justin bullies me. To address ongoing symptoms related to his left lower leg stress reaction, which was diagnosed at the beginning of the season, but it feels like even longer than that. And he's going to go under a period of rest and rehabilitation activities and return to basketball as appropriate. And like we already knew, he's out for the season. And it's just, you know, there was no hope that he was actually going to come back this year. But it's just, again, another bummer in terms of news, because I think Windler is a rookie that I would definitely like to see out there. And he would have been arguably at this point, honestly, because of the Cleveland's current situation with, like, Kevin Porter's injury and Brandon Knight kind of sliding over to the three, and he's been hurt, and Dante Exum is now playing out of position at the three. This would have been a good opportunity for Windler to get meaningful minutes and learn and grow in his rookie season, and now we have to put everything on hold until next year. And yeah, it sucks, because I think out of all of Cleveland's rookies, KPJ had the most excitement factor after I came around on him and watched him in action. But Windler was a lot of fun to watch in summer league with a lot of just G League level guys out there, and it just kind of stinks that we don't get to watch that momentum that he was building upon in Utah. And did he play in Vegas? I can't remember.
I think he did a little bit. That feels like 9 years ago. My thing with with him is I just want to know, and I don't think I hope that I know there are like NBA rules. I mean, you and I have done both talk to him and his kind of team, non-Cavs team, in certain ways, in certain instances already. But he's like, the Cavs are sort of like going to be obligated in the next like 6 months to make him available. So NBA rules that if you're out for that long, like you have to make him available like one time or something like that. Other than that, thanks Kyrie Irving. And how that sort of one being the one that pointed out on his podcast. But I guess the question now with him is just like, when, how healthy is he going to be? When do we find out, you know, exactly when he's going to be back, when he can return to basketball activities? The sooner, obviously, the better. You know, certainly, I don't think that's going to be something they're going to rush him back from. I think the question now is, do we see him in Vegas? Do we see him at Utah, assuming they go there again next year? Or is it the next time we see him, you know, training camp of next year? I think that's kind of really just what we're going to have to wonder about now.
No, I agree. And again, this kind of circles back to that question I asked you a little bit ago. Like, I also wonder with how this whole procedure went down, and people are kind of citing and connecting the dots that maybe Bayline's methods in terms of practice and in terms of just like how he handled training camp might have compounded this injury. And I wonder if like this situation is going to have Bayline not lighten up per se, but change his methods. And I hope he does, but yeah, I don't know. Like you said, they have to make Windler available at some point, but I feel like he's going to kind of be behind the scenes, just hanging out with the team and doing rookie stuff. But yeah, no, I'm just curious to see how his rehab process is going to go. It kind of felt like he was on the precipice of returning for the longest time, and then the Cavs just felt like setback after setback, and the Cavs just shut it down because, I'll be frank, lower legs, any type of stress reaction in your leg is a tough game to like figure out and help it heal and recover properly. And, you know, if the surgery helps and this becomes a non-issue going forward, that's fine, but for now, you do have to be a little bit concerned that he wasn't able to get fully healthy to get back out there, and that surgery was the only route that the team was and Windler both were willing to take to alleviate this. So hopefully it isn't a serious issue going forward, but we'll have to see what happens.
Yeah, I think that's as good a way to put it as anything.
Yeah. But, you know, the nice thing is we were actually just – I touched on this a second ago or a couple seconds ago with – the Windler injury is Alphonso McKinney, as we learned, thanks to Chris Fedor beating me to the punch by 10-15 minutes. Just, again, shout out to Justin for bullying me about this and calling me freaking Ari Damorell, which that one was like a low blow. Like, that one actually kind of hurt, but
really rude. It's really rude on Justin's part.
It is. I'm like, I'm not spouting like, whatever. I'm not gonna, we can't, it's like, it's like a terrorist. You don't want to say his name a bunch of times and give him free propaganda. So we can't be.
Yeah, no free plugs anymore. No more free plugs.
Yeah, no more shout outs. Carter, beautiful baby. Good luck with the podcast. Justin, I hope you stubbed your toe tonight. But no, Chris Fedor announced that through the team, obviously, that.
Wow, that's amazing. I didn't even know he meant to say that, but I'm here for it. Continue.
Well, he was the one, he said that, quote unquote, NBA sources that Alphonso McKinney will be signing a 10-day contract with the Cavs tomorrow. And I spoke with McKinney's agent at this point, if we're just going to keep it 100% transparency here, and he will be available to play against Washington tomorrow. And it turns out that, from based on what I gathered, Alphonso wanted to come back to Cleveland. Apparently, he had a few other 10-day offers on the table from other teams. But Alphonso and his agent both agreed that Cleveland is the best opportunity for him. One, because he's comfortable with the system, and two, he has a legitimate opportunity to get minutes here. But the most important thing that he kind of told me, because I talked with Alphonso for a little bit, I have a piece coming out around the same time as this podcast will on Thursday. He wanted to come back just because he likes playing here and he likes all the guys here. He mentioned to me that when he signed his first 10-day with the Cavs when he was with the Pistons, he said all the guys were hooting and hollering, going absolutely nuts, and they're just excited to have him back. And he's just like, you don't really get that and with most teams. And he's just like, I really like it here. And I guess hearing that was kind of nice because you don't hear a lot of players just openly saying, like, if they have options, they pick Cleveland and they pick it because they like it here. So I don't know. But on a basketball sense of things, not on a person sense of things, I like Alphonso McKinney a lot. He provides a lot of depth on the wing. He can play the three and the four, and he's versatile. But yeah, no, Chris, how do you feel about seeing good old Alphonso back through probably the trade deadline at this point?
Yeah, I think it's a logical thing. I do think it would make sense to have him around for the full season. I do think his wing depth is just going to be a concern. You know, trades could change that. You know, they could bring in guys that, if they're not, you know, guys you love, like they're maybe signed the rest of the year because you flipped John Henson for a wing that has a contract on for this year next year, something like that. Mm-hmm. That could lessen the need for him. And then financially, you know, the Cavs are very, I think one of the things that we've seen the last couple weeks, they're doing as much as they can right now to limit to give themselves as much room as possible underneath the tax, which they should not be paying this year. It would be ridiculous for them to do that. They're really being careful about avoiding paying the tax, doing anything in that kind of realm, just to kind of keep their – just to give themselves some flexibility in trade. That's one of the things I think Kobe Altman has really made an effort to do the last few weeks. And I think with McKinney, he definitely makes sense with KPJ still out for a while, for with Lindner mm-hmm. not playing this year. It really leaves Jetty as, like, the one kind of actual wing right
yeah.
now. Like, that's a lot to ask of Jetty. I think there's a last year for me, even though last year was really his first full active NBA season. I think last year was a pretty good indicator that it's not going to be something Jetty's just going to be able to handle. So I think we have McKinney's back as a good. I think I would play him more. I would do all that kind of stuff. And then we'll see where the roster ends up. We'll see what other things happen. But I think at least for the next 10 days, and then I think ideally after the deadline, depending on what happens to the roster, I think it makes a lot of sense. He's not someone that I think we should view as a future rotation piece for the team next year. I think if you draft a wing next year in the draft or sign someone in free agency who's better, like there are ways to improve on that spot. But for this year, to me, he makes a lot of sense.
No, I 100% agree. And actually, he shared with me that another reason he was so apt and quick to sign to Cleveland is how much belief the coaching staff has in him. He told me that when the Cavs played the Pistons and went to overtime, he didn't get much burn. But J.B. Bickerstaff apparently called his number to try and defend Derrick Rose in the closing possessions and through overtime. And he's like, you know, that just means a lot to me. And no, I agree. Like, for now, he is a defensively, he brings a lot to the table. I would argue that he's Cleveland's best defensive wing, which I did a couple blinks there while saying that. I think it's a position of need. He fills a lot of what the Cavs are looking for, and maybe he can carve out a little bit of a nice role and get up some good minutes and put up some good numbers, and then finally finds a team that he can latch onto long term, because he's 27 years old. So he's, even though he hasn't been in the league very long, he's kind of at the age where you're start teetering him towards a veteran. So maybe there's a team out there that has a little bit less of a niche need like the Cavs do, where they're just kind of starting for talent all over and he can transition to another organization. But no, happy to have him back. By all accounts, I've always liked what he brings to the table, and it's just something the Cavs need. And it's, yeah, like you said, you don't want Jetty just being the lone true wing on the roster and then give John Boeheling the task of trying to plug in point guards that were just a little bit taller, a little bit lankier to play the three as well, or Jordan Clarkson as the wolf / backup wing as well. I don't know. I'm happy to see it. And it's definitely good news overall, and happy for Alphonso that he can keep trying to make his NBA dream happen.
Yeah, I think the best version of him is probably like on a team like he was last year. But I think for the Cavs, like, he's certainly a useful guy. It's why I liked the signing when it happened over the summer. When they claimed him, I thought it just made a lot of sense. And I think for what they need right now, I do think they could do a lot worse at that spot, or could just be kind of ignore it and lead into the tank anymore. I think he just is going to help you in ways that aren't going to win you a ton of games necessarily. But I think it's just a guy that I would be very comfortable with having from the Cavs. So I think it continues to just be a smart thing to keep him around.
No, absolutely. Before we go, also, former Cavalier Delonte West, I'm sure a lot of you saw the videos at this point of just in the dire straits he's in. Thankfully, I I don't know if you've seen the Shams Charania report, but it's all over the news at this point. But thankfully, the NBA is working with him and his family to get him the help he needs. And I just hope he accepts the help that he needs and just can get healthy and be better, because not be better, but you know what I mean. It's just, it was definitely, we finished recording an episode and then you messaged our group, our Google chat, and said like, are we sure that's Delonte? And I watched the video and like, I knew right away. I'm like, yeah, that's Delonte West. And it just broke my heart. So I'm glad that the NBA listened to a lot of the fans reaching out and saying that, like, please help this man. And I'm glad that there's people out there that care about him and getting him the help he needs.
Yeah, couldn't have said better myself.
Okay, we'll be right back. Here's a quick ad read from yours truly for Indeed, but we'll be back in just a second, and we'll be taking a couple of your mailbag questions, so stay tuned. Hey guys, Evan here. When you start your hiring process, you may have questions. Will you find good applicants to choose from? What about education and experience? And how will you know you've made the right hire? Well, Indeed is here to help. Millions of great candidates use Indeed every day to find their next opportunity. You can post a job in minutes and use screener questions to help create your short list of applicants fast. Also, you can add skill tests to your job posts so you can be confident in your applicants' abilities. Their library of more than 50 skill tests range from industry-specific skills like accounting to general aptitude tests like critical thinking. Indeed gives you the smart tools to make hiring decisions quickly and to be confident that you're making the right hire for your team. Post your job today at Indeed.com/lockedon. Post your job today at Indeed.com/lockedon and get a free sponsored job upgrade on your first posting. That's Indeed.com/lockedon. Terms and conditions, exclusions apply. Offer valid through March 31st, 2020. And we're back. So like we touched on a little bit ago, we asked you guys through Twitter, email, and Reddit to send us some questions in for a mailbag. And the response was actually kind of overwhelming for us, and we couldn't get to all of them. So Chris and I, since it's been a little bit of a slow period, I just jinxed the team probably by saying that. But
Cavs are definitely trading Kevin Love tomorrow and Tristan Thompson tomorrow now. And they're going to trade Colin Sexton for like 2 second round picks and be like, we don't think he's good, just like a lot of people on Twitter. Like, that's exactly going to be the quote, and we're just going to all implode. That's going to happen. Thanks a lot, Evan. Good job.
I try. Man, I'm getting punched by everyone today.
I never punch you.
You don't have to adjust in me either. It's okay. We'll just call it that. But. So we're going to touch actually on a few of the questions from Reddit. We actually have quite a few of them. So I'm going to grab a couple at random and we're just going to discuss on them. But the first one that caught my eye is from Backloading. And his question for us is, does Dean Wade have a role going forward with his team? Chris, I'll let you take the floor with this one first, pal. What do you think? Do you think Dean Wade has a role going forward with this team?
I'm a Dean Wade believer. Draft people that I talk to on Twitter and that know more about this stuff than me, frankly have me convinced that he's someone that we should be paying attention to. I don't think he's like going to be all-star or anything like that, but I think you look at his skill set, a pick and pop big. I think if you look at just how he sort of operates, what he seems like, the production level he's doing okay right now in the G League, with 15-8 right now. I think he can be just a solid NBA player. I think that's, and he's the kind of big that I would feel good about investing some time in. Now, I think you see that too with how the Cavs are approaching him. They're not like shuffling him around on their two-way deals and risk losing him. Like, he's the guy that they've protected. He's the guy that they've invested that spot into. Like, they let Tyler Cook go and then brought him back on 10 deals. They didn't do that with Dean Wade in risk losing him. The question, will become like, he's only on a 1-year deal, so will they? And it's restricted so they can match any offer, but what do they do with him next year? What does the front court look like next year? But I think if given the chance, and I think if he is developed correctly, I do think he's a rotation piece. I think he probably should have been drafted. I think he's a quality player, and I think he's the kind of big I would want to pair with guard to want to run some pick and rolls with.
No, I 100% agree, and like you said, after the draft happened, and I think it was soon after the draft, the Cavs announced that they had signed him. Trevor Magnotti, shout out to Trevor, the draft genius himself. He's like, yeah, actually, that's a really smart signing by the Cavs. And I had no idea. So I'm like, yeah, that's a really smart signing. If Trevor thinks it is, I know it is, because, like I've said, he's my go-to guy when it comes to the draft and helps me pretend I'm an expert at this. But no, I think Dean Wade is a good prospect for the Cavs to keep their eyes on. And yesterday, like Ty Windisch and I touched on this, like a lot of NBA teams are now starting to properly utilize their actual systems and actually use their G League teams for proper player development. And Dean Wade's going to be hopefully a product of that, where he may not get a lot of time up here in Cleveland. He's appeared in 7 games and he is averaging 2.3 points, 2.1 rebounds, and 6.7 minutes per game. So obviously he's not going to really crack the rotation this year, but if he's a guy you can keep under wraps and keep within the system and develop, no, I absolutely agree. He can be a solid piece. Like you said, he won't be an all-star, but no, a good complimentary stretch big. And maybe, like we touched on this in the last segment about Zizek, he might be more of a Bayline big than Ante is, and that's totally fine by me, because he's also going to be cheap for a while too, because I imagine he's not going to be getting a massive contract from the Cavs anytime soon. So no, I'm definitely happy with Dean Wade, and I think he has a future with this team. How long of a future in a role going forward? Nothing certain, because this team's in a renaissance era, so I think everyone is available for the right price if it helps this team get better. So we'll see, but for now, no, I think Dean Wade is pretty solid overall, and I've liked what I've seen. Next question. This one is from Philip Geb, and he said, realistically, what do you think Chetty Osmond's ceiling is? Last season at the beginning, he looked like he was taking a leadership-ish role and trying to assert himself on offense. Then once Sexton got going later into that season, Chetty kind of backed off and started playing passively. It looked to me like he's been that way ever since. Do you think he can take a step forward and become a real third option, or do you think he'll max out as a nice role player? To me, I'm conflicted with Chetty, because I like a lot of the things he brings to the table offensively, but I've kind of always been like, he's on a really hot shooting streak lately, and I'm really hoping he can keep it up, because you and I both noticed earlier in the year and for a while he would just have like a couple consistent games and then just completely fall off the earth and lose confidence in his shot. And it was up and down, up and down, up and down. And right now, knock on wood, hopefully it keeps going, but I think long term, I don't think realistically you could have Chetty as your third option offensively. I think he's a nice complimentary spark plug piece off the bench that can give you some instant offense, a little bit of playmaking, some rebounding, and can play the three. And I prefer him to play the two, but for some reason the team likes him playing the four. But no, I think just the way this draft is shaking up, and maybe future drafts as well, the Cavs are going to be targeting wing players, and even through trades and free agency. And that's, and then like you also have KPJ as well, who can play the three, and I think actually fits in better long term as a starting small forward for the Cavs than Chetty, which is fine. And I think just being able to get a good player for what they got for Chetty, and having him as a complimentary bench piece going like in the long term future, is totally fine by me. And I'm totally comfortable with that. What about you, Chris? Do you think he has the ability to step forward and be a third option, or do you think he's just going to kind of max out as a role player?
I think he could be like a fourth option. I think certainly could be. I know we haven't seen it. I'm still pretty high on his secondary creation abilities and his passing ability in a way that we haven't totally seen in the NBA yet. But I also just like, if it hasn't popped yet, I wonder if he's going to be a guy that is going to need to have better teammates around him, and that might not happen going forward. I'll ask you this, Evan. We both sort of think that Colin Sexton is a future bench player.
Yeah.
Will be best served coming off the bench. Would you do something? I don't know if it's like you just tinker with the lineup. I think for this year, I think it would almost have to be that, unless you get someone back in a trade at the deadline or something like that. But I almost wonder if, like, when you move Colin to the bench, and let's say that happens beginning of next season.
Mm-hmm.
I think Chetty would be a really nice like running mate with him on the bench, because he's going to pass the ball. He's going to keep things moving. I think they'd be an interesting defensive duo. I haven't looked at Jetty's defensive numbers in a while, but he is at least a smart team defender.
Yes.
This would be worth a deep dive that maybe we'll do kind of in the future, but I think they at least have the two guys that I would like as sort of a bench combo, if and when that ends up happening.
I would definitely agree that if the Cavs make this transition for Colin towards the bench, which I think, at least if you ask people on Twitter and us and other people who cover this team closely, like, they're all on board with the idea of Colin eventually just kind of carving out a role as maybe a diet Lou Williams with a little bit better panache for defense, and that's, I think, perfectly fair for him. But no, I agree. I think Jetty would be a good running mate with him off the bench because they already have an established chemistry after playing. Well, at that point next year, it'll be two full seasons together, and I think it will just make the transition for both of them easier if you have two players that are comfortable with one another coming off the bench. And then if you think of it this way, who knows what the Cavs are going to do? You can throw Larry Nance into that wrinkle as well, and then you have three guys there that are all comfortable with each other, and I think that just is going to help to elevate the three of them, especially for Jetty and Colin, if they make that transition towards the bench. But we'll see what happens. I don't know. Yeah, I could also see where you say where he could be at his ceiling, like a fourth option, but I just feel comfortable more so taking the bet that if/when Jetty takes on more of a reserved role, he will still get a decent amount of minutes, at least because he's an established veteran. The transition will be a lot smoother, and I think he can bring a nice niche and wrinkle to the offense, especially if, like, Windler's healthy as well. Like, you could be bombing threes, and so you could put spacing around Sexton, which is probably the best way for him to operate if he can learn how to read and kick out and everything. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. I'm not sure. We're going to do one more question, and we'll just – this is a real quick one, and this is one that touches us deep in our soul, Chris. This is from Nun69, and he asked, why does Sexton refuse to pass the ball? And it feels like a bit of a loaded question.
Yeah, okay, so I'll just say this. You can, as certain members of the broader Cavs public relations team have said – there are definite instances where, like, he is not, like, there are games where, like, I promise you listeners this, from next Sunday until the following Monday, I'm going to track, like, how many times in games he has things that should be assists that are missed shots, and I will track those. I will, like, personally track those by hand and point them out and kind of average them out versus his overall numbers. There are games where he has assists. I think what the thing is with Colin is that he plays at one speed and is, like, barreling at 100 miles an hour all the time. And it's sometimes I think it's just, like, playing at that speed all the time basically means he's not going to see guys. And or it's harder to see guys. And so he has this one mode. And I think I think that is the root of it. It's just that he plays at a speed that is going to stop him from necessarily – seeing the whole floor and seeing things, but he doesn't always give things a chance to play out either. He's just going so fast. And it's just, I think it's sometimes his speed could be better utilized is, I think, one of the root problems with him as a lead distributor right now.
No, I don't think you could have said it any better. And, you know, more power to you. There's a million different ways I'd rather spend my time in Florida, but if you want to Pepe Sylvia your hotel room trying to track Colin's potential passes and misses and it just turns
I'm gonna, like, carve them into my hotel wall, and I'll get a serious fine. I'll be like, look, I had to track it. I'll be like Ray in The Force Awakens, like counting the number of days, but just the number of missed assists for context.
Well, more power to you, man. You know, if you make it someday, if they make the Chris Manning wing of Cleveland sports coverage, they have
they
to like
do that. But wait, that'd be a big waste of money. That's a big waste of money, and like because like if I my descendants will be like also as probably also likely anxious people, they'll be like, I don't need this in my life. Please just get rid of it. That's better for everyone if that doesn't exist.
No, I get that for sure. All right, I think that's a good place for us to stop this segment, and we will be right back with a quick preview of Cavs Wizards, which will probably be one of the ugliest games, maybe uglier than Cavs Knicks. But stay tuned. All right, and we're back with the final segment of today's episode. We are going to touch on Cleveland's old rival, you know, that Soulja Boy LeBron days, the Washington Wizards. They are currently 14-28 and are playing the Miami Heat as we are recording this, so they will be coming into Cleveland on the back-to-back, and they are third in their division. And, you know, it's also going to be a nice little homecoming trip for former Cavaliers little man Isaiah Thomas. Chris, what are you looking forward to or taking notice of when it comes to this matchup with the Wizards?
Yeah, as neither of these teams are playing particularly good over the last 2 weeks. As of Wednesday, as we're recording this, before they Washington finishes their game on Wednesday, both the Cavs and the Wizards are bottom five teams in point differential over the last 2 weeks. Over that span,
Thanks.
The Wizards are 25th in defense. The Cavs are 26th, or excuse me, they're 25th in defense, 26th in offense. The Cavs are 23rd in offense and 28th in defense. So neither of these teams are good. Even though the Wizards like have Bradley Beal, who will be the best player on the floor and all that. I think the biggest thing I'm really looking for is just like, what does the Cavs energy level look like? They're back at home. They've had a couple days off. They did practice Wednesday, which John Beilein was pretty pumped about, but the Wizards are coming in having on the second half of a back-to-back. If you look at just a schedule perspective, this is a game the Cavs should win, even if the roster is a little funky right now and whatever. But I really, more than anything, I'm just going to be looking about, like, what does just the team look like actually coming off this road trip and having a couple days to recover on. That, to me, matters more than probably any little thing else I'm going to see in this game.
No, I absolutely agree, and it's kind of funny that you say that the Cavs should win this game, because I think we should just learn this lesson at this point, that if the Cavs are supposed to win a game, they're probably not going to win it. But, boy, oh boy, is this going to be just a gross matchup overall. Either it's going to be thoroughly entertaining where we watch the young guards just absolutely eviscerate a very bad Washington defense. Kevin Love has a good night. Tristan Thompson has a good night. Even Jetty has a good night and keeps his hot shooting streak. Or the Cavs are going to stumble and fall flat on their face. But like you said, Beilein had a lot of good coach talk today. We're talking about how they had a really good practice. I love when a coach talks about how they've had some really good practices, because that's going to make the difference. But we touched on this a little bit. The Cavs were coming off a very long road trip, and they kind of just fell flat. And even Beilein touched on it, talked about how people kind of warned him, saying that when your team's coming off a long road trip, that first home game is usually the toughest when you have such a short turnaround. So I think a few days off will probably do the Cavs a lot of good, and I think they'll come in sharp, locked, and loaded. But like you said, Bradley Beal is by and far going to be the best player on the floor tomorrow night. Kevin Love is a distant second in that regard, but I'm more interested to see who Beilein is going to task with defending Beal, because it's like you said, we've touched on before, Colin is doing better defensively this season, but he's still by no means a great defender, and Jetty is doing better defensively this season, but again, by no means is a great defensive player, and then Darius is just a small and very thin, undersized point guard at this juncture in his career. I think that we might have ourselves a Bradley Beal career night tomorrow night, like much like Zach LaVine did when the Cavs blew that game against the Bulls.
Yeah, I'll be very curious to see. I will be very curious to see what they do with Beal defensively. You know, if they have Sexton on him, if Garland ends up defending him, you know, if Jetty gets that assignment, you know, if McKinney, you know, assuming he's available. As expected, it gets that assignment. I wonder how they approach that. I haven't had a chance to look at what was said Wednesday, and Beilein's going to play a lot of this stuff close to his chest as well. But I wonder if there's anything that they saw coming out of the road trip that didn't work that they will go away from. I thought one of the things that really worked in the Denver game that we didn't necessarily see as much of was really doing some stuff with Kevin in the high post. It's where a lot of the good offense still comes from. And against a bad defensive team like Washington, who might just look at Kevin Love too long, I think there's a way to manipulate that and kind of get the offense in the groove. But I don't quite understand. I guess we don't know yet what the plan is going to be exactly in that regard.
No, I 100% agree. And maybe, like, that'll be a good offensive wrinkle for the Cavs to exploit, and I don't want to sound like a dick here, but maybe playing Washington, and just since they're pretty just bad across the board, it'd be a good way to, you know, establish a bit of a comfort level to rapport with having Kevin in the high post going forward and just working that in as an offensive wrinkle, because I know he did say that he could be here 5 weeks or 5 months, and the trade deadline is ticking closer, so might as well just have some fun with it and actually help the growth and development of these guards. But I don't know. I'm expecting this to just be kind of like a game overall. We'll have to see what happens. But man, I'm like looking at Washington's depth chart. We're not even going to see future Giannis Ryu Hachimura tomorrow night. We're not going to see, I mean, obviously John Wall's out. Mo Wagner, who I think the Lakers ended up panic trading to the Wizards, but that's fine as well. But I'm also interested to see, will Brandon Knight be back? And will we see John Henson back as well? Actually, you know, John Henson will probably get some minutes tomorrow night because with Zizek out, there's no excuse for Bayline not to play him going forward.
No, there really isn't. He's gonna, as long as he's on the roster, he's gonna provide some stuff. He's gonna provide some stuff on the in terms of rim protection that the Cavs are just not going to get anywhere else. So I don't know. That'll be interesting to watch. I do wonder just too, like, what does the rotation really look like? Is there any tinkering that gets done? I don't know how you feel about this. I feel like when and if we see Beeline kind of tinker with stuff, we've seen little bits of it here and there with when guys come in and whatnot, but I feel like we're just going to find out about it once it happens. Like, he's not going to tip his hand in any way. So, I'll be really curious to see, like, if coming out of the road trip, if there are any kind of rotation adjustments and what that could mean from court, if there's any stuff that, you know, like, he surely is going to know. He's not going to be one of the people that gets blindsided by a trade. I wonder if there's a point where, like, he is knowing something's coming and it's just kind of going to start prepping the team. If there's a little tea leaves we can read in that regard. It wouldn't be for Kevin, but, like, for John, for Brandon Knight, for Dele, like, someone else, I wonder if that could be there.
No, I do wonder that as well. And it'll be just definitely interesting to see what the kind of execution and everything going forward is going to happen. We actually have a few questions in the mailbag that we didn't get to touch on, but like, a few of them were like, do we know if XYZ players going anywhere? I'll be frank with you guys. The Cavs are a pretty tight-lipped organization. Kobe Altman himself plays with his cards pretty close to the chest. Most of his trades usually either come out of left field or surprise the hell out of me. So yeah, no, maybe like Chris said, we'll be getting maybe a little bit of insight of what the Cavs plans are heading in closer to the deadline. And it's hard to believe if January is almost over and we actually tomorrow is we're officially 2 weeks away from the trade deadline. So no, definitely interesting to see. Chris, before we go, I know it's just not the most exciting preview for Cavs Wizards. It's just, we'll have to see what happens because both teams are kind of beat up with raw injuries right now. But what are you looking forward to? You know what? Actually, not looking forward to. What was your favorite moment in that weird time in Cavs history when it was really LeBron had a beef with Deshaun Stevenson and the Wizards? What was your favorite moment in that rivalry?
So I was in eighth grade at the peak of it, and I was throwing for the track team that year, and my throwing coach was late to a meet because he went and got the 23-cent pizzas from Papa John's.
Oh my God, I forgot about that. They did that. I completely forgot about that happening. In my hometown, we had one Papa John's, and I guess I'll dox myself a little bit, my family. I grew up in Wadsworth, and we have one Papa John's in town, and I remember the line was wrapping around the building like two or three times, and then it was just going forever because everybody wanted that 23-cent pizza. That's the king of memories. Like, I completely forgot. That was such a weird time. You know what? Every time is a weird time in the Cavs.
Yeah, but like the whole Soulja Boy Jay-Z thing, which like that feels dated. It's just everything about that was so bizarre. But in a good way. I'm pro bizarre. I want more like rapper involved NBA beefs.
I do too. And
more fun.
We'll have
that, like, yeah, it's, you know what? We drive ratings back up. We get like a diss battle, like a rap battle on television. Not really. That would drive down ratings. People would forget about that. Yeah. But I want more like shenanigans that are not like what color, what is Kyle Kuzma's fit before the game? That's what I want.
Yeah. No, I agree. And just that's a topic that I think you could talk about forever. What the NBA could do to help the on-court product, but we're not in that position. We're just two black boys chatting about the Cavs on a, well, cold for me, lukewarm for you in Florida Wednesday night. But to everyone, thanks for tuning in. We really appreciate it. And we will be back tomorrow to recap Cavs Wizards, maybe touch on a few more of those questions. So stay tuned and talk to you then.